Hello and welcome to IMP's WWE Adventures Podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. You can help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and the AEW Match Guide. Also support us through Chopped Tees, which was announced last Friday. I cannot praise enough the work that has been done through Chopped Tees for Social Suplex for every single show. To support your favourites, please go over to Chopped Tees. We've got merch! Yes, and it's all really good quality. It's amazing. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. 30 minutes in the aftermath of the new AEW deal with Warner Brothers Discovery. A lot of people showing themselves up when there were so many people, bad faith kind of takes or whatever, being like, why would Warner Brothers ever do a deal with AEW because of these? Because when WWE is so much better, AEW's audiences are down, blah blah blah. When the people making those reports, like Andrew Zarian's done amazing work for it, when the people doing those reports are like, it's happening though. It's not a report based off of rumour or nothing. It's like, no, there's substantial stuff to this. Like, it's genuinely happening. People like Sean Ross Sapp's doing victory laps. Obviously, Rich, which was on Twitter, doing all the receipts as well. When I say it's wonderful to see people showing their ass, it was known at the time that they were showing their ass. Now it's just bringing it back to the light, being like, hey, we've not forgotten. Like, we said at the time, when a deal gets announced, you'll be showing your ass, so just don't say this stuff. Just don't put yourself out there we're telling you. You don't have to do this. It's so strange. Yeah. But the other aftermath as well is for WWE, with this kind of like new era of SmackDown on USA. We're now in that period where Raw's about to become 2 hours for its final run on USA Network before it jumps to Netflix. And the NXT had its first show on the CW. We're pulling in its biggest rating since, was it 2023, 2022? Like, it's the biggest rating in quite some time, and WWE were pushing that through. It's a next era, a new thing. AEW celebrating their 5-year anniversary, WWE about to embark upon this huge thing with Netflix. But for this week, it was the Go Home for Bad Blood, which takes place this Saturday. So anyway, let's jump on over to Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. I bet it took them a long time to think of that name. Let's jump on over. But it's a city in Oklahoma, what shall we call it? Genius. Genius. Now let's jump on over to Friday Night Smackers. I am blind, in my head. SmackDown had a Randy Pandy to kick us off, sucking up to the fans before switching to his good pal Cody Rhodes. Who is his good pal, who he definitely won't be turning on. All of this set up for people keep turning on each other and whatever, then you see them try to fight against turning, and then you're given all the reasons before you for why they would turn. I much prefer this style of storytelling what they're doing with Kevin Owens, and I'm assuming what they're also doing with Randy Orton, where they are building it up. They are showing you them as friends and showing them not wanting to turn, but that pressure being there to do so, knowing that it's such a huge opportunity to be right there. Like, the prize would be there if they were to turn. And they're doing that really well with Kevin Owens. So when that lure happens with Kevin Owens, it also makes sense for Randy Orton. Like, I like this stuff. It's the thing I kept saying with Vince McMahon's writing was they've essentially introduced the gun. They've done the Chekhov's gun thing. They've introduced it, but they're not immediately firing it. They're now giving you the character reasons which will build up to it being fired. Whilst Vince McMahon would introduce the gun and then immediately fire it. It's like, oh, okay, cool. It results in a moment, but it could be so much bigger. Oh, it could be so much. It's weird because in the 80s he did it. Obviously going back with the Vince dot last week. Where they did it with the Mega Powers. They set it all up and gave the reasons why Macho Man would want to turn on Hogan, then eventually did it to see what kind of became, where they would just introduce a thing and it would then just happen. Like, oh, okay. Well, this is set up, and I'm all for it. But Randy Pandy got the blonde gentleman to explain why on earth he'd team with Roman Reigns. I like this. Last week made Cody Rhodes feel that much bigger as well, because he was also part of that huge cinematic presentation with the Roman Reigns segment. But now in the aftermath of that, it makes sense that Kevin Owens, who we saw his immediate response to it last week, but we kind of dive a little bit deeper into it with Kevin Owens and Randy Orton this week. The logic of he kept his word when he was being a dick, so I have no reason to believe he wouldn't when he's not. Basically, when he was a dick, he promised he'd do these dickish things, and he kept his word. So why would I doubt? He's always been a man of his word, even when he was being a dick. Like, he'd tell you beforehand, so why would I believe that he's changed at all? He's like, surely, when he's making a promise, he's going to deliver it, whether he's being an asshole or not. I mean, it's some form of logic. That's what Cody's warped in his mind. If he gets beaten up, it's his own fault at that point, when that's the strength of his logic. The crowd bought it too, though. That seemed to work for Randy Orton. just as things became a tad more serious, with a little title focus shift between Cody and Mandy, Kevin Owens was out to join the lads. But no speaky speaky for him, as Solo's music immediately hit. That's what you get when there's enough good guys in the ring for a six-man tag. Obviously bubbling into Owens, issuing the challenge for the main event, Kevin Owens and Randy Orton versus Solo Sikoa and Jacob Fatu. You gotta give the Bloodline a visual win ahead of Bad Blood. They're two good guys. How are Roman and Cody going to beat them? Ah, no. Kevin didn't want Cody's help, but Randy did. Oh my, the drama. Fatu now receiving the no-sell pops. It's like, oh yes, there's a nice another little layer to his character. It feels like they're really building him up as the breakout star from this whole Bloodline angle. They are building that up. And again, but again, they did the same with Solo, and then after the John Cena win, they just stopped, and then you started losing stuff. Like, you don't just stick with it. You got something special here with Jacob Fatu. I feel like it's almost like they got themselves a special do-over. Like, they mucked it up with Solo, but suddenly they've got a do-over with Fatu. Like, can genuinely build something up. But Fatu was springing right up after an announce table back body drop, working as a great ad break lead-in as Orton just dropped him three more times before dropping Solo on the announce table too, sending the crowd into such a frantic frenzy as they go to ad break. Orton also getting the hot tag pop, which makes sense given the simmering prize fighter within KO. Like, you give those biggest pops to Randy and the ones within the fight to Kev. A nice little, for me, little subtle way to start to get the fans ready for the turn. You don't condition them to have those big pops related to Kevin. You still give him those pops of things within the fight, as I'm talking about. Like, he gets the big moments within the match. But the big hot tag, that goes to Orton. It's clever. They've thought things through. maybe I don't have to say clever, but it's just, again, evidence of they've thought it through. They've not just put a thing out there. The W not so easy as the Tongan interference doesn't work before getting fought off by Cody. Now that's the run out that works as the distraction. RKO to Tama, stunner to Solo, and we get the visual loss for the leader of the Bloodline. But Fatu rolled Cody into the ring and onto the ref's leg. The Rhodes distraction causing the loss as Solo steals it. Booking that doesn't help us take Solo seriously, but does bubble that brewing beef for Owens fully turning. Again, lots of plates spinning, and they're all being spun really well. We're building, apart from Solo. He's the only one. He's the only one I've got critique for. Let's then move on to the rest of the show. The number one contenders match for the WWE Women's Championship, Bayley versus Naomi. It's just nice friends, just having a lovely competitive tussle. Like, see, like, they don't have to become enemies. Naomi with plenty of the offense as Bayley kept kicking out with her babyface fire. The crowd polite after a sunset flip into the turnbuckle didn't come close to meeting said turnbuckle. But when the crowds are hot, they're also forgiving and just up for having a fun time. Gone is the you fucked up chance. They are no more. No more are the fans not really invested in what's happening in the ring and then come up with a chance to entertain themselves. It's what kind of is like, oh, okay. It's for some of the chants that have latched on in the post-Vince era, which were like conditioned response stuff, like the We Want Tables. I guess We UF'd Up was part of that. It's good to see that one's disappeared. But what's in with Austin when we're not really paying attention to what you're saying? And then We Want Tables was also, we're not paying to your story. We just want to see the thing. Was when the product wasn't that good. Now that it is, those responses don't really fit in for me. That said, We Want Tables has become a thing you just chant at a show. It's fine for WWE. I really don't like it when it pops up in AEW just because the way they present their wrestling and their storytelling is to get you engaged in the match. So that chant just doesn't make sense in a WWE, in an AEW world whereas it does in a WWE. Like, it's fine. WWE are in a good position to a point where these chants of fans entertaining themselves don't need to happen anymore because they're just invested in the action. I'm not talking 80s, absolutely crazy. The crowds in the 80s were absolutely insane. Just in terms of the atmosphere, going wild for everything. Like, we're not at that point, but they're in the point where they're forgiving and they're not doing any chants now, really, against the show. When they're watting and when they're doing the table thing, they think that's within the supporting of the show. It's like a thing you do when you're at a wrestling event rather than chanting against the show. In the end, Naomi rolling through after a top rope nothing, only to turn and run into a Bayley to belly. And always nice to see folk winning with moves that aren't their finisher, as Bayley flew with the elbow drop for the win. And immediately just like, oh yeah, Naomi would be new blood for Nia. And I guess that's not the name of the pay-per-view. So Bayley gets the win. Later on in the show, the two hugging and still friends. But no threat, Tiffy was there to take the piss out of Naomi and accidentally chat herself into a match with her for the go-home show. And immediately into the other notes. For me, they were the two big things. We had the setup for the women's match and the kind of giving the villainous tag team the win ahead of Bad Blood. And the rest of the show was just as, like, nice little notes. I haven't really got a lot of negatives for SmackDown this week. Like, this was a good building show. It's not the end of the world if you don't see it, but if you do watch it, yeah, you have a fun time. So the other notes, a nice little character note for Jackson Stratton backstage before the Bayley-Naomi match, which shifted us behind Miss Money in the Bank whilst helping Nia feel a tad more serious after the past few weeks have kind of painted her a tad of a dum-dum baddie rather than big scary baddie. And the way that she was talking to Tiffy was a much-needed shift. Something that we really needed to see. Get us to remember, no, she's a big, scary bully, is the character of Nia, rather than, oh no, I've caused a loss. Ah, oh, I'm a dum-dum. Kind of stuff that I've just been playing out for the past, like, few weeks. And her build-up to winning the Queen of the Ring and her title win did it pretty well. And then since she's won the title, it was a little bit of a, well, the way we build up her challenges is, uh-oh, I've done a dum-dum. Which is not at all the vibe I was getting from her character, but this here, this was it. On this night, they nailed it. Andrade and Carmelo Hayes had what I'd consider as their best match in their series. It was match number 6, by the way, with the score being 3-2 to El Idolo, so you can guess who won this one. And no, for me, it's not like the Bucks Lucha Bros series, because that was set to be a series from minute one. It was back-to-back weeks. They said ahead of time, we're going to be having 7 matches in a row. It's going to be a 7-match series, and we're going to go through it and keep the score. With this one, they decided to turn it into a series partway through, and it wasn't consecutive weeks. It's more of a, in hindsight, they realised, oh, we could just keep booking this, and they'll get better each time, do a little series between each other. But it was never meant to be a series from the get-go. It turned into a series. Completely different aims and objectives is kind of the point I'm making here. It feels like this is Andrade doing a really strong job of building up Carmelo Hayes to then set Carmelo Hayes as a number one contender for the US title, and throwing in a title shot for Andrade within the series is quite smart in doing that. Mia Yim continues to eat up all of her TV time, continuing to be impressed with her. Like, she's in the show's death spot every single week, coming out to a kind of reaction, but then absolutely kills it. I remember saying that with Jonah, Bronson Reed. I remember saying that with Bronson Reed, where it just felt like he was doing a great job, just in a crap spot, getting no reaction. Do this, but in a better spot on the card. We'll give him something to get the crowd behind their character, just because it's WWE, so in trying to get them over with in-ring stuff isn't going to work as well as doing something outside of a match to get them over. And now look, the Braun Strowman stuff has been so perfect for him, but also it was the Seth Rollins attack as well, so putting those two things together, which you see on more. Anyway, it's a bit of a tangent, I'm getting ahead of myself. And finally, AJ Styles got a VTR play, as the first sight of AJ since France will be next week on the go-home for Bad Blood. Welcome back, AJ. Welcome back. And that was SmackDown, as I said, a good building show. Not the end of the world if you missed it, but you'll have a fun time if you watched it. And there's a nice little character notes being built up for what's going to be coming next for all the characters. So yeah, I guess it's a thumbs up, but it's not enthusiastic. It's an Orange Cassidy thumbs up. It's like, yeah, it's good. Yeah. Anyway, let's jump on over to where was Monday Night Raw? Evansville, Indiana. That's a place I've definitely heard of before. Nope. Is that where Evan lives? I don't know. The Bad Blood go home show from Monday Night Raw. So let's jump on over.
No! That's the visionary!
And I'm, of course, starting with the last monster standing. Bronson Reed versus Braun Strowman. The big boy bash battle. 10 minutes just barreling around and making such a mess of this lovely Indiana arena. Like, hey, this match was everything I wanted it to be. Sometimes I don't need a wrestling classic. Like, in terms of the structure of my week, I don't need every show to be a wrestling classic. Because I had AEW Dynamite, and it's just like, yeah, I'll get my, oh, this is wrestling kind of fix on AEW Dynamite, whilst over on Raw, I'm getting a spectacle of big boys barreling about. That's absolutely fine. Wrestling is the best when it's variety. Yeah, no, I love this. 2 minutes in, and we got an announced table chokeslam already into the ad break leading, setting the tone and just wasting no time getting to the clobbering. So at the time, I was like, oh, this is accidentally funny, because I'll talk about the moment. When they came back from the ad break, they had the chairs lined up at ringside, and then Bronson Reed ends up taking a relatively accidentally funny bump because Braun Strowman, I don't know if he tears his groin there and then, but I thought he'd done something to his ankle the way he was limping, but apparently, according to Dave Meltzer, the day after, Bronson Reed had generally injured his groin. So that meant that when he was doing his charge, the post-ad break off the apron onto the chairs bump for Bronson Reed ended up flying off a charge with no momentum. So it just looked weird. And Bronson Reed's like, ah, and then does the dive. It was very clear. It's like, it was all Bronson. But whatever, you're going to get more bigger spots. Also sucks for Braun Strowman. He actually has something to go off with after this because he's done such good stuff for both Braun Strowman and Bronson Reed. The booking of it for me was absolutely perfect because Bronson Reed gets elevated because he goes straight into a feud with Seth Rollins. Braun Strowman gets the win and a huge boost of momentum, only to have injured his groin in the match, so he's not going to be on telly. He's like, oh, that sucks for him. But some other great spots. Brawling up the stage around ringside into an awesome Death Valley driver off a big soundbox through some tables. Strowman struggling as he moves around limping and slow. The momentum also not helped by yet another ad break, not even 4 minutes after the last one, meaning that the match did flow from one big spot to the next. The ad breaks giving basically meaning that you were skipping over the downtime, and then you came back from an ad break, saw a big spot, go to the next ad break. Yeah, so if WWE fans, after this match, if you're out there calling AEW just a spot fest, one, it's proof you're not watching, but also proof you're not watching your own product, because this was jumping from one spot to the next, and it was awesome. It's absolutely fine. A big kerfuffle over the planted fans at ringside taking the brunt of a barricade charge. Like, hey, at least they thought it would be pretty serious if it was actually fans, though. So everybody rushes out. But that then flows into the next closing sequences. Because that gets out security. Adam Pearce, all the backstage officials. There's a crowd of people checking on the fans. Reed in the ring hitting two tsunamis on Strowman. But everybody, including the ref, is focused on the fans. Building into an amazing setup as Reed through security to get to the ref. And the final straw of putting his hands on Adam Pearce. A big security surrounding in a big brawl as the crowd rose to their feet. Because they could see it off camera. Strowman climbed to the top and did a big old dive onto everybody. That was really well set up and really well executed. Strowman winning himself to the top rope. Because got to end on the big ring collapse spot even though he's got a pulled groin. Doing it, and apparently WWE weren't exactly happy with it. I thought it was fine. It was big enough for the crowd to react to it. So we're not talking the exploding ring from the AEW match. So it was big enough to cause a reaction, but it wasn't big enough to exceed the predicted expectations. I just can't remember who it was. I want to say it was Dave Meltzer again, or at least it was Brian Evans, someone on the show. But for me, it made a really good point. When you know the exploding ring is coming, and it's been set up to do so, rather than in the past where they've not really explicitly set it up on the television, whilst this time they very visually teased it. So they didn't have people saying we want to do it, but visually they were like, we're going to be doing it. As an audience, you're going in knowing that they're going to do the ring collapse spot. Yeah, this was set up, and I was talking about how much I liked that. That does then mean, but the spot has then got to be big, because you know it's coming, and you won't get as strong of a reaction if it's fine. The vignettes of the ring post would then go outwards and the ring would just collapse. I don't know what happened, but it didn't quite look big enough. I don't know if... Because two of the ring posts didn't go down. My assumption was that's so that the bump would be alright. But yeah, it maybe wasn't quite as big. Apparently it wasn't as big as they wanted. It was like, it was fine, but I understand what they mean by being like, oh, we wanted it to be bigger. However, for me personally, it's not that big a deal. Because yes, you got that predicted, but they're immediately serving something that you were not predicting. So you still get that big reaction and the crowd still goes off air white hot. I think for me, that's why it's fine. It's because they had something ready. Something else was happening. Which was going to get their big reaction. So they set up a predicted thing, only for the not predicted thing to actually get the biggest pop. Because we had one more spot. Seth Rollins ran on out and stomped Reed's head into the steel steps. He can't get up. Strowman gets to his feet. As soon as that ended, like, oh, that was just a whole heap of fun. Seth Rollins coming out, I did not see coming. And just the huge pop that he got, and you go off air white hot. You just feel excited when it ends in that manner. A really well-structured match. It was a big spectacle. And because of the ad breaks, he was literally jumping from spot to spot. It just meant it was just an exciting time. It was just fun. Big barreling boy fun. Really, really enjoying myself. But yeah, speaking of needing to do its job... Drew McIntyre versus CM Punk. CM Punk has been doing some press, kind of just talking about how he feels like he really needs to deliver a classic in Hell in a Cell to really bring it back. And last week I talked about how it's been quite a while, because they did the Edge Finn Balor one at WrestleMania. There's been no sign of it since, so it's been a year and a half since a Hell in a Cell match. But under the Triple H era, they've just not been common at all. He's done one, and I think that's huge. Just in this era, there's only been one. Just makes the match feel bigger when you get it. And here is like a feud that had to build up for it to get here. At a pay-per-view called Bad Blood. So the cell was lowered. Adam Pearce in the ring with security to oversee the final chin wag. In another company, Punk being dressed in all white would have been a bad foreboding sign for Blood. In WWE though, I guess his trousers matched his shirts and... That's nice. Good for you, Punk. Contrasting against Drew McIntyre, who was out-dressed smart in a black shirt and tuxedo blazer, Barrett did a great job painting the Scot as a scary force, putting the focus on Drew McIntyre's like dead stare on Punk, like coldly fixed on his opponent as he walked on in. Great line from Drew as well, as he told Punk, "You taught me how to hate, and on Sunday, that hate will die with you." Punk then telling McIntyre he'll be sending him back to Scotland in a box. A lot of promises that they're going to struggle to keep. Both lads are promising death. They're like, oh, what are we going to expect in this Hell in a Cell match? It's going to be blood, it's going to be violent. Yeah, we're going to end this, .. No, they're promising death. You're going to struggle to deliver that. But yeah, this was all about the spectacle of the cell and seeing them together in that cell. For me, that's a really good way to sell the cell to Raw Bad Blood. And so visually you see it. And if you want to see them fight, buy the pay-per-view. The World Heavyweight Champion Gunther. Did he give Sami Zayn the title match the Canadian has been asking for every week? Yes. The lad now convinced Gunther will never give him the match. Why? Because you're not on my level, is Gunter's line. Perfectly set up the reminder that Sammy was the one that beat him at WrestleMania. Gunter bringing up that his family were also there in Philadelphia. He just didn't parade them around like Sammy did. Talking about the different relationship that he has with his family because he's the Golden Goose special child. His family isn't used to seeing him lose. Whilst Sammy's family is used to watching him fail. Sammy finally found his in and got the Austrian to clobber him in frustration, using the champion's dad to get under his skin and get beaten up for his trouble. But it worked. He got his match. He got beaten up by Gunther, but he did get his match. Yeah, but yeah, I like that because it's just them talking about their families adds so much to their character. Their relationships with others speaks about them. So it's really well written stuff. But then Sammy digging in deep to a bit more of a villainous side, to be a bit of a dick to get his title match. For me, that's quite important in taking a babyface seriously. It can't be the ultra-moral goody guy all the time. Otherwise, that's just way too... The face will be like white meat babyface. Just pure morality goodness. This is who the person you have to aspire to be. And if Sammy's like to do this, he was willing to be a bit of a dick. Gets you more behind Sammy. But it's nice to see them get a follow-up half a year later. Bad Blood's set to be a really good show. They've got some... It's a very strong card. Our new Intercontinental Champion kicked off the show. Jey Uso got his wee little celebration to kick us off. After last week's big win was him capturing his first singles title. The chap is quite over. Like, I swear his music played for 5 minutes straight. Then just a little yeet fun with the crowd, getting emotional, talking about his mother. And that emotive beat is the call out for the big bad loser, Bron Breakker. Don't worry, he was out there with the respect for both the Intercontinental title and, after last week's match, Jey Uso. Like, I'm sure the villain congratulating you were the better man is nothing to worry about. When Jey Uso comes into work next week, he's going to be perfectly safe just to go to the next title challenger. The match that he's doing with Xavier Woods, which is set up later. There was nothing to worry about this week. Breakker just genuinely leaving the ring respectfully. A nice, important character note for when that if it screams over eventually going to turn to go babyface. Just give his character notes like this, where you can then feed on those later down the line. It's like, no, there are notes of a respectful guy within there. But it's also a pretty good setup for next week for him to just batter Jey Uso. Just to come out and be like, nah, once Bad Blood is over, immediately just swing some focus into Bron Breakker again and just have him destroy Jey Uso. And onto the other notes, there's quite a few for Raw. It's not quite the same quality for me as SmackDown had. SmackDown felt pretty focused in its build. More like, well, probably because of the length of it, it's going to have ebbs and flows. There's some very strong flows in this week's show, but also quite a few ebbs where the show was just happening. Things were on. And no surprise that the Punk McIntyre feud seems weekly to be at the start of that second hour. Like, routinely they've got it. Which tells me that that's probably one of their biggest draws on Raw at the moment, which would be no surprise to me. But in terms of the... Actually, no, this one's a flow for me. I enjoy this. Xavier Woods' bubbling turn continued to simmer as we got our first sight of the full-on in-ring heel action from the lad. He faced Ray Ray and won by accidentally removing the Lucha Legends mask. But he did take advantage of the opportunity, even if afterwards he was just screaming, "What do you want me to do with that? I did not mean for that to happen." It's almost like he's unwillingly becoming a heel when he's obviously every single thing that happens he's like, but what was I meant to do? And there's a believable factor of just like within this spirit of competition, what was he meant to do with that? And that just continues to build and he almost reluctantly turns heel. Karrion Kross was watching Woods' backstage segment with Kofi from the shadows. Kingston was telling him that he's passing the IC title shot Jay wanted to give over to Kofi to give it to Xavier instead. But then later in the show, in Kofi's match against Gable, we had a somewhat respectful affair before Woods grabbed Chad's ankle and accidentally cost his stablemate's SOS attempt and he ended up losing. So Woods, not a good week for Woods. A funny moment with a Judgment Day outside by Dom's lowrider, when not even 10 seconds later on the bottom of the screen is the new Mattel Lowrider out now. It didn't even wait until like later in the show. It's like, no, immediately we show it, we do the Mattel plug, and then it's never talked about ever again. It's like, you're gonna do that each week? It's just funny that it just happened so quickly, one after each other. They had a six-man tag against LWO because without Finn, why not? Like, you got time to fill. That's what I mean by a bit of an ebb. But it's a trick. Finn actually was there. Such a villain. He cut a promo after. At Bad Blood, he's going to prove that it was Damien that needed Judgment Day. The group never needed him. Which calls out Priest and Ripley. Ripley doing a promo on the stage with the shark cage. Priest then comes out and sends us to send us into the pay-per-view with a wee brawl. It's in the other notes because it's fine. They did a fun brawl. Awesome. Rhea Ripley still incredibly over. Damon Priest is getting more over as weeks go on. His babyface turn has really worked, and what they've done since SummerSlam with him and Ripley has really worked, even if I find the name of the territory is a bit cringy. The actions they're doing has been perfect for them. On the opposite end, Pure Fusion Collective's Zoe Stark tangled with Lyra Valkyria. The villains have new generic music now. I'm sure that'll get poof over. I'm sure it'll work. Party Girls made the save. Then backstage, they set up a match with the Scottish. And finally, The Miz turned heel, turning on R-Truth and walking off in their match against AOP. It seems to be Miz has his time. Where he has a month where he'll have a bit of a build-up. And last year, he got his title match against Gunter, when he kind of got his build-up and then that kind of ebbed away. How they've used him with this has been perfectly fine. And they're giving him like a month for Miz. And then he builds it up and has a big match, puts someone over. That's fine. Absolutely fine. But Babyface Miz has never worked for me. I think his match with Gunter was like, that was the peak of this character, but 1 year later, it's like, but we are like ready for the Miz to not be that. Character works best as a heel, but it was nice to see him actually reach a high as a Babyface character with the Gunter stuff. Enjoy being a baddie again. But that is the end of Monday Night Raw. As I said, SmackDown for me was way more focused, but that's maybe just because of the two-hour stuff. But there was a thing from Sasha Banks. I mean, she's talking about WWE, that makes Sasha Banks again. But she was just talking about how Raw going to 2 hours is actually really bad for the talent. And immediately I'm just like, but it's great for the viewer. It just means that the company is set to have long shows. They've got, the amount of talent they've got is for that length of period. So it makes sense it sucks for the talent when an hour gets taken away, because then suddenly you've got way more talent than you have time for. It never results in anything good when that happens. That said, it's great for the viewer. There'll be peaks within the show, and then the show will just be happening. And Gwyneth Monsoon's very happy. It's a happening. With that, I'll be back this time next week to talk about Bad Blood, so we would have seen Hell in a Cell. They've promised death. Will they at least give us some blood? Like, it's a pay-per-view called Bad Blood. You've got a pay-per-view called Bad Blood. They've promised death. and it's on pay-per-view in Hell in a Cell, called Bad Blood. They've promised violence. They've promised death. I'm not expecting any blood, to be fair. If there is, not on purpose blood. Anyway, to that I say thank you for listening. For listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner, always appreciated. Never take it for granted. I'll be back this time next week to talk about Bad Blood and Monday Night Raw. And with that, I bid you adieu. Buy our merch. Adios.
This message comes from BetterHelp. Can you think of a time when you didn't feel like you could be yourself? Like you were hiding behind a mask? At work, in social settings, around your family? BetterHelp Online Therapy is convenient, flexible, and can help you learn to be your authentic self, so you can stop hiding. Because masks should be for Halloween fun, not for your emotions. Take off the mask with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.